I don't remember the intro, but I'll try.
It's been a while.
At least we're not the official ones, right? See that shit?
No. What?
The Light the Fuse guys are now the official podcast for Mission Impossible.
What?
Yeah, Paramount bought them out.
Sons of bitches. God, I know, damn, right? It. Well, good for them. I'm so happy for them.
Oh, yeah. they already had like Hollywood, insides in Hollywood already. So it wasn't like that wasn't too far off. But
when it means bought them, are they still the hosts?
Yeah, they're still the hosts, but they have to do kind of more promotional stuff now.
Okay.
So they've got a new episode every week. They've been promoting the film like on their websites and on, they're like official, like literally official. They're a Paramount subsidiary.
Hey, Paramount, just remember, we went on a hiatus when there were no movies and then came back when there were movies. So just hit us up.
Exactly.
We'll promote the shit out of this thing.
No kidding. But yeah, that's really good for them. I mean, they're everywhere. They were in Rome for the premiere.
Oh, good for them. Oh, good. They got to go to Rome. Awesome. Yeah.
And then they had Tom Cruise on the show and everything.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic. Hey, Tom. Tom, if you want to come on the show, anytime, man.
We're the unofficial.
We're true fans, true movie lovers, Tom. Tom, we love movies too.
And popcorn.
I am popcorn and lots of other foods. All right. Let me do an intro.
Okay.
Welcome back, listeners. It is the Minute Impossible podcast. If your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to review us, to go over, I don't even know anymore. It's been so long since I've done this intro. To talk about the Mission Impossible movies one or many minutes at a time, for lack of a better term. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
Oh my God, we're back, Chris.
It's been a minute.
Well, it's been almost a year and a half since our last episode.
The last one we did was the review of the trailer for Dead Reckoning.
It was. It was a while ago. But we said when we said a long time ago, we were on the 23rd or 24th minute of MI3. We said, hey, if they're going to not put out a movie, we're just going to go on hiatus. And so we just turned off our computers and said, we're not turning them back on until the movie's out.
I forgot the password for my computer. So
I know, me too. I don't even remember what it is. I think it's like Tom Cruise 123. I can't remember.
Yeah. But I remember we did talk about there being two movies a while back. Yeah. So that was a long time back. I think we were still finishing up. We just maybe started Mission Impossible 3. It may have been the end of Mission Impossible 2. I can't remember, but I remember talking about it. And here we are with the first one.
Well, we're back for this is our reaction to the movie. We've both seen Dead Reckoning Part 1. And also, we're going to talk about it in a non-spoiler way for a while. And then we will transition to a spoiler review of the podcast of the movie. And then next week, you'll be getting the beginning of Minute Impossible coming back full time. And by that, I mean, it's not every day anymore, guys.
No,
it's not three times a week either. We are going to be doing this. And I was trying to come up with a word because I'm on a couple other podcasts. We call them chunks on Cast and the Furious. We call them cuts in Sword Boys. I think we call them clusters. Let's call it clusters. So we're going to do movie clusters starting next week, and our next cluster will be a Mission Impossible 3, starting with the eyeball explosion and ending right before they go to Italy and go to jump into the Vatican. So it's about a 20 time code. I'll give that time code at the end of the episode so that everybody wants to listen can listen. So super glad to be back. Hi, Chris. Yes. How have you been?
I'm good. It's been busy. Super busy.
Good.
But yeah.
Been busy seeing this movie.
Yes. Yeah. So I went on Tuesday afternoon, but the one day off I had this week, and I went first show in IMAX, go see it.
I assumed you saw it in IMAX. Yeah, that's what I assumed. I did not see it in IMAX. You told me later that there was nothing shot in IMAX cameras.
No,
is that true?
There was like one or two shots, maybe one or two scenes that were done, not even full scenes, sequences that were pieces that were done. And I talked to Charles Hood over there at Light the Fuse about it. And he said that they told him that they didn't have enough to justify pushing out an IMAX print. There's still an IMAX version, but not IMAX formatted as far as like the aspect ratio changing.
Gotcha.
So they didn't need to do, but they are supposedly a couple of scenes in 8 that are going to be IMAX.
They shot this all digital this time. This is the first all digital production from what I saw, right?
Yeah, the first one that they shot all digitally. The last 6 were all on film. So, although I do know there were sequences in Fallout that were digital.
Sure.
Like the Halo jump and the helicopter chase were all digital.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's go with it up front. What'd you think?
Yeah, I loved it. To me, it's one of the better ones. It's not Fallout to me, but I loved Fallout. But I'm holding judgment on it until I see the second part. Because it's a whole, you know, it's missing half its movie, basically.
I think it is. I thought it was better than Fallout. I thought it was.
That's good.
I went in there. I did not see it IMAX. I saw it regular. But I went in there. It was last night. I saw it in a theater with not packed, but it was a good group of people. It's a Wednesday night at like 7:30. The thing that got me was at the end of the movie, which it is a two-parter, but at the end of the movie, it completes this part. Like it's not like a cliffhanger, which is great.
No, which is great.
That's not a spoiler. But what I was super happy was at the end of the movie, I kind of felt like if you told me this movie was an hour long, I would have believed you. It does not feel like it's 2 hours and 47 minutes or whatever.
No,
it
doesn't. It didn't feel that long.
It flew by for me. I had a great time. And I was
I did too.
I wasn't in an Alamo theater. Hey, Alamo, if you want to hit us up too, I will rep you no problem. Because I wasn't in an Alamo theater. There was people talking to my right. There was a guy behind me who kept commenting every time something happened. He'd be like, oh, that's cool. Or he'd say something stupid like a boomer would. And then the guy in the front had kids, and one of the kids had an iPad and was playing video games during the movie.
Oh my God.
And I was like, at one point there was sound coming out of the video game, and I was like, I can't even. I told them that they need to turn it off, like turn it down. I mean, it's 7:30 on a Wednesday night and they take a kid to see a movie. This kid was 5, easily. Wow. 5. Your mom and dad are such big Mission Impossible fans that they can't, like, you know, just wait. I don't know, get a babysitter. It was super weird. So
I mean, I had 2 10-year-olds and a 16-year-old with me. So it wasn't like I was alone and I had kids too, but you know, the 16-year-old was quiet the whole time and into it.
Yeah.
The younger ones had a little harder time, but they were leaving to go get drinks and go to bathroom a lot. So,
but they didn't pull out a video game thing.
No.
The point is love the movie, even with all those distractions. It was nonstop action.
It was nonstop.
If you're wondering if you should see it before the weekend, I recommend it. Go as soon as you can. And it's the same thing. I saw an Oppenheimer trailer before it. Oppenheimer's trailer is like, see it on the biggest screen you can. Yes. I agree with that 100% for this movie. See it on the biggest screen
you
can.
See it on the biggest screen you can. We saw it on a pretty big, it was a laser IMAX that I saw it on. And I kept waiting for this is before I knew that there was no IMAX ratios in it. I was waiting for the IMAX ratio and it just never happened. I was like, I hope this is the right print, but it was the right print, and it still was gorgeous, and it still looked great, and it was still really awesome. You know, every time another action sequence happened, I was 100% in. You know, I mean, the whole time I was, but the action sequences were really impressive. You know,
about a year and a half ago, once I stopped reading the trades and all the stuff coming out about it about a year and a half ago, because I'm like, when this movie does come out, I don't want to know anymore, because it's almost been in the can too long. Like, it's been, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it just, because of situational stuff, couldn't come out. And I'm like, I don't want to read anything. I didn't know probably half the people that were in the movie. I had forgotten a few. And so when they show up, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Like Shea Whigham and those kind of things. Yeah. You know, like, again, not a spoiler. He's in the cast. Super great to have a spectacular cast. I was happy to see all the people back from the original movie, all the stuff going on. It was super fun.
Yeah, I was surprised to see like all the people at the opening sequence that was there. I was surprised by that completely. I didn't expect, you know, Cary Elwes or some of the other people that were in it, you know.
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise has a definitely, when he likes you, he starts putting you in his movie, because we'll talk about in the spoiler section. There's some people. It's not, some people don't like to be spoiled on who's in the movie, but there are people that have been in other movies with him. Cary Elwes is one of them.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's just, this just happenstance. It's not like he like went back and was like, oh, I want my Days of Thunder co-star to be in this movie. I'm sure it was more he tried out for the part and was perfect for it. But this is a huge recommend for me, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely one I'd see again as soon as I can. And I'll also, you know, own the digital and the 4K, you know, definitely.
Well, you're a physical media super. Yes, I am. You're a future trash guy. You love owning things that are physical that are going to someday be thrown in a trash can. I am all digital. And I have to say, I have been super happy with being all digital. I've seen the movies because I normally don't own everything, but I've owned all the Mission Impossible movies, and it's fun to watch the cover art change. Yes. I've all owned them for so long. I've seen the cover art change from pretty crappy, like 90s BS, you know, stuff, mm-hmm. the early 2000s with the woo influence and stuff like that. Yeah. All the way up to this very stylized now look that it has. And they've also gone a little retro. This movie poster, they've had a bunch of posters for this one.
Yeah.
But a lot of blues, mm-hmm. almost like staying away from red as a color.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So it's been super fun. I don't know who my standout star is in this movie, because I don't want to say it in spoiler stuff, but there are a couple. I would say this movie has, and there are a couple of sequences I would love to talk about. So all in all, our review of this movie is top notch. Go see it. Yes,
go see it.
All that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
What else do you want to do in the non-spoilery part? Oh, we should let it, you know, we will be doing an episode in the future, probably in the next month or so, with the Spy-Fi guys and some other people. Because we're kind of putting together like a Mission Impossible, you know, group.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we all kind of love Mission Impossible movies, so we're going to talk about it. And one of the things we're going to talk about, Christian, who's one of the hosts over there at the Spy-Fi guys, turned us on to this. He wants to do an episode where we not only talk about the movie, but we also talk about what we think is going to happen in the next one. That's a super fun way of trying to like just spitball what we think is going to happen. Cause is it shot and done?
It's almost shot, almost done. I know they've been shooting for about a year, almost a year at this point, but now with the SAG going on strike, it's probably going to shut down.
How many years in between did they take off in between shooting the original during COVID and starting up again for the second one?
Well, they were still shooting the first one during COVID and on and off. So I think it started and stopped like three times for the first one. And then they stopped last year. Once they were finished filming, they stopped. So he and McQuarrie could go promote Top Gun. And as soon as they were done promoting, they started shooting. But all that time he was training for some of the stunts that he's doing in the next one. Now, I know a lot of that stuff's shot already. I don't know how much of the movie's shot yet, though. That's the question.
Okay.
I'm assuming the majority of it is, because even during interviews and stuff, Tom's talking about, well, next June you'll find out about this, you'll find out about that. So I'm assuming he's still in the running to shoot it, to have it come out next June.
Well, he's got a new hairstyle right now, so I'm just wondering, like, he has a completely different hairstyle than he has in the movie. So
yes,
he has longer hair now in real life than he does in the movie. I did spoil something. His hair is short in this movie. Great.
It's supposedly going to be longer in the next one.
Okay, so time's going to have passed or something.
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of time jump, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the good. Let's lock down the spoiler, and this review will self destruct in 5 seconds.
Yeah, we get into that great spoiler discussion.
Mission accomplished.
You actually said that out loud. Mission accomplished.
I said
it. All right, now we're in spoilers. You feel that?
Oh yeah.
Again, insanely good movie.
Yes,
I laughed with glee so many times during this movie at the ridiculousness of both the stunts and the red herrings that they created for us with the promotion of this movie. This is one of those things.
Oh my God. Yeah.
One where we all know Tom's going to do some insane stunt and it's going to be death defying. It's going to be great. That is not even, it's part of this movie. I wouldn't say it's one of the top three
no, I agree.
Stunts of the movie.
No, I agree. I agree completely. It was like one of the lesser, the bigger stunts that they promoted to me were like the lesser stunts in the movie to me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. They, well, cause this one, I mean, they, when they show it, when they actually show him on the motorcycle going off the edge, it's one shot. It's not multiple shots. It's one shot and he goes off the edge and then he's flying and it's amazing. And we know it's him.
When they cut to that shot of him falling down the mountain and he's, the camera's right there next to him. You see him falling. I literally gasped. I was like, oh my God.
Is he in that shot? Is he holding the camera toward himself or is there
somebody else with him? Or is it a drone? I think it's a drone.
You think it's a drone? Okay. I'll want to find this out because I want to know if it's a drone that followed him down
or another camera operator.
But if they did that, then they had to do that part from him just jumping off the building. Yes, you know, like less of, it's not really a, it's not the motorcycle jump at that point.
No. It's a different stunt altogether. Yeah. It's a different stunt at that point.
Oh my God.
It's like two different things, I think.
Yeah. A lot of, he's definitely riding the motorcycle. He's definitely driving the cars. He's definitely
coming down that mountain.
Oh, it's so good. The things that got me, I did not think I needed a car chase. I did not think I cared about a car chase.
Especially after Fallout. I thought the Fallout one was great.
And then they jump in that stupid Fiat.
That was awesome.
It was so good.
It was great. And the fact that they kept switching between him and Haley Atwell was fantastic.
That was an extremely clever way of having that car roll over and them actually switch seats.
Yes.
Was hilarious. And her not being good at driving, also very funny.
Very good, yes.
Haley Atwell in this is great.
She's my MVP in it. She was fantastic. As much as she annoyed me for the first half of the movie, because I was like, oh my God, let me help you.
Yeah, because she's, let me help you. And also she's being like the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like almost like they're coding her to you not to like her.
Exactly. Yeah.
I understand that because she's not at the point where she understands the choice. Now this movie is the first movie to tell us about the choice.
Exactly.
Which is every person who's in the IMF is at their wit's end, up against a wall problem. And the IMF basically makes it go away by saying, will you come help the greater good? And will you choose to accept? It's an interesting thing I did not think about with these movies, in that they're really not ordered to do these jobs. If you choose to accept it, takes on a whole new meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That this is a volunteer army.
Yeah. And if they're caught, that's why they're disavowed, because nobody knows who they are.
Yeah, it's great. And we learn a little bit about Tom. Learn a little bit about Ethan's past. Mm-hmm. There's something going on with another operative, and Gabriel is there. Gabriel's our bad guy.
Yes. I thought was also fantastic. Ethan Morales is
my MVP of the movie.
He's fantastic, man.
I always love him. My wife, when I told her that S.A. Morales was in it, she said, does he yell Richie?
Yeah, he does. He does do Richie, but it's Ethan.
Yeah, he goes, Ethan. And I was like, yeah, he does it. He does the Richie. If you've never seen La Bamba, he's really good in that.
He is really good in that.
I love his character. Gabriel is this like psychotic knife guy. Again, back to the first movie. Mm-hmm. If you think you can go into these movies clean and never having seen the movie, I'll just watch the more modern ones. Bullshit.
No, you got to watch all of them.
You 100%. They don't explain a thing. They don't explain Max. They don't explain any of the stuff that they've done before, which is great for those of us.
And they bring it all up. It all comes up. So if you haven't seen the first one, sure. Confused as to what I mean. I know somebody who saw the first one and saw this one and still didn't get that Max was she was Max's daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they in this one they really pushed it home by saying really your mom, Max.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like
exactly
the last one they just kind of hit you. We knew it, but you didn't perfectly know. It wasn't 100% known.
Well, and in the last one, she wasn't meant to be Max's daughter. She was meant to be somebody else. And
right.
The way that she played it, that came out, you know, that's the way it came out, you know, so it makes sense. I'm grateful for it, though, because she's fantastic, too.
A noticeable missing person is Simon Lane, which Solomon Lane.
Solomon Lane, yes.
Which is, I'm fine with it. I think his story, if he comes back ever in a future movie, I'm great with that. I know we left it with, it seems like he might have been murdered by someone, but I don't think so. I think he's just was in that trunk and then being used for his knowledge. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, that's a, I mean, it'd be fun if they ever did it to bring him back to go work with Ethan.
Oh my God.
But that's a whole nother thing.
That would be an interesting part of that. Pom was awesome.
Yes, she was.
She is plays Paris, I think.
Yeah, Paris, name. Yes, Paris.
She's the henchman of Gabriel. Yeah, awesome. I've been reading all of her social media.
Yes.
I did not know that that's why she got into stunt fighting, was to be, she's young enough to have watched the Mission Impossible movies and said, I want to do that. And so she studied stunt work so that someday she could work with Tom Cruise. And it's funny that her acting is what became the thing that they wanted. And now she's a double, if not triple threat. She comes in as an actress that can do stunt work and has a physicality about her, which they show in the most claustrophobic fight scene ever.
Yeah. And it shows that she's a stunt person. Cause I mean, she's fantastic with all that jumping and everything.
Yeah, she does. She does really well. How happy were you to see Kittredge?
So happy. Oh my God. So happy. And then when he was on the train at the end, even better.
Can you explain to me two things? First, what the hell was that office that they were in at the beginning with Kari Elles and all those people with typewriters?
They were putting everything in there analog wise. They were redoing everything analog for the digital. That's what that office was. That's why all those people with the computer with the typewriters in there.
But Kari Elles doesn't know, supposedly Kari Elles' character doesn't know anything about the AI.
Yeah, I don't think that was his office.
It seemed like it was his office. Is it Cerny's office?
Maybe, because they were calling him there at the phone.
Yeah, there are two parts of this that are confusing.
Yeah.
That part, and then another part with Kari Elles is at the end when he's on the train.
I don't think Kittredge knew he was there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think Kittredge knew he was there.
I was a little confused and like, oh, is Kittredge bad? Are they flipping Kittredge?
Because he's supposed to be the Secretary of Defense, right? Is that what he was? Or the head of CIA?
Kari Elles. He's supposed to be the Secretary of Defense.
And if you notice in that office behind him as he was talking, there's a picture of Angela Bassett on the wall with a bunch of American flags behind her. So I'm guessing, is she the president now, or is she head of something that they put a picture of her behind him?
I hope she's the president.
I do too. That's what I'm hoping for. I know she couldn't come back because of Black Panther.
Yep.
But I would love for her to be in the next one, even if it's just a cameo as the president.
Well, we've never had that level. There's always been a degree of like the president doesn't even know who the IMF is. Because as we learn in this movie, Kari doesn't even know.
Yeah. Well, I remember we joked like 2 or 3 years ago about what we hoped for. But we heard there was going to be two of them, like when they right after Fallout, we said we hope they bring back Kittredge and we hope he's like president or something crazy.
Yeah.
And to have him come back and be still head of whatever he's the head of now is
he's the head of the IMF. I feel like did he take over?
It seems like there was no IMF director, though, as the way he put it. I don't know if he's the director of IMF or just the director of like the CIA or what, you know.
I like the fact that you said you saw it with your son and two others. Yes. I saw it with my oldest, and first thing he said when he got out of the theater was, I need the IMF to get back to being funded. He goes, I need the IMF to have, I'm tired of like mask machines breaking. I want them to be completely funded with thousands of gadgets.
That's hilarious.
Cause he's like, I just missed that part. He goes, they're always on the run and they are always
rogue.
Well, they go rogue. Oh my God. Well, one, they bring it up
exactly
in the movie. And then they also, they go rogue before the credits, which is amazing. Credits are 28 minutes into this movie.
Yep.
Cause at one point
I don't know if that's longer than I think it's longer into it than Fallout was, cause Fallout had a long time into the credits too.
Yeah. It's a while. It doesn't bother me, but I kept wondering, when are we going to do credits? And the credits were more, they've gone back to this since, actually Ghost Protocol did this too. It's the flashing of showing the movie, basically.
The movie, yeah. Cause the first movie did that. I remember that.
I remember that too. And then they got away from it and then went back to it. And I love, it's great. Always great.
Yeah, this I think movie they did it in Fallout too, if I remember correctly.
Did they do it in two?
No. Two was like the images of Bellerophon fighting Chimera.
Well, at least we weren't flying through someone's brain looking at sparks of DNA like we used to with like X-Men and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. At least we weren't doing that.
Yeah, or Fight Club.
Yeah, we had just learned CG could do that.
CG could do so much.
Oh my God, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this movie starts out with literally a bang. Now that guy in the mask we thought was going to be a bad guy just turns out to be Ethan.
Turned to be Ethan Hunt, exactly. Just when I saw the actual face, I'm like, that's got to be somebody because it doesn't look like a name enough actor the face looks kind of off. I don't know why to me, but I was like, it's got to be either Ethan or the bad guys. You know, I just didn't know who it was.
And he's got that Dr. Mindbender mask and those green balls.
Yeah, the little mask. I loved it.
The thing that got me the most, I'm just going to move around. This is less of a, I don't want to go through it beat by beat. I just want to talk about the highlights that we loved. Yeah. The thing that made me laugh out loud was the train. The train going off the edge.
Yeah.
Probably one of the funniest things because you do not see it coming. You see them decouple the train and then they have to car by car come back up and climb. And each room is like a different horribleness. Is in it? Like one's the,
oh my God, that the kitchen with all the liquid fire stuff and everything. Oh my God. My
nightmare. And then the last one was the room with a grand piano hanging from it.
I know. It was a nice homage to the general and Buster Keaton in that whole sequence. And then, of course, a huge homage to the original Mission Impossible train sequence, you know, because he's on the roof fighting again. And as soon as he falls down in a tunnel, he's got that same shot where his face is looking right at the camera as the camera's zooming by, you know, or as the train's zooming by in there. I was just really happy with that because that made me feel, you know, they were acknowledging that he had been on a train before, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. And even Kittredge says, because you seem upset. He says that to who he thinks is the White Widow. And I really wish she had said, you haven't seen me upset.
Exactly. I thought that whole sequence where she was pretending to be the White Widow was fantastic too. She played it. I mean, I recognized right away. I'm like, oh my God, she doesn't have the blue eyes. And I thought it was fantastic the way that Vanessa Kirby played it as somebody completely different. You bought that it wasn't her, you know? I thought that was Hayley Atwell under there. I was impressed with that.
Yeah, an impressive mask work in this movie. Yeah. Love a good mask.
Oh yeah.
And they nailed it. The only other thing I really wanted to bring up was the rest in peace Ilsa Faust.
Is she dead though?
Because
they brought it up at the beginning that she was, you know, dead and she wasn't. And we never saw her body move. We never heard anybody mention that she was dead again. We're just assuming she's dead.
Are they pulling the same thing that they did with at the beginning of the movie when you see her laying there and Ethan looks at her and it's sad. Yes. And then they come back to that same scene later and then she flips over.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
I'm hoping for that. Cause I mean, it would be a waste of Rebecca Ferguson, in my opinion, if they killed her off, but I get it. I get why they would. But again, at the same time, I hope that they don't.
I don't think they have. I think they've, and this is going into almost what we're going to talk about in the next movie, what the next movie is, my prediction. One of them is they have to fight an AI who knows everything. And one of the things that's permutations was one of these women has to die.
Yes.
So they killed one. And so now Ilsa Faust is now off the table in the AI's computations. Mm-hmm. So that means she can come in and help them at a point when they need it.
She's got to pull a Martin Riggs.
Yes.
Like a Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Exactly.
So That's my hope. Yeah, I hope so too. She's not that she's not big enough an actress. Like, she's a huge actress now, and I understand if she literally can't come back.
Yeah,
she's in Dunk and
everything. Yeah,
she's in Dunk and she's in Silo, and she's doing so many other things.
Yeah,
I get it, but God, I hope she comes back. Also, I would love to have. Hey, it wouldn't hurt to have two women on the IMF team.
Exactly. Yeah, to have Haley and her on the IMF team.
Because I don't like it when a movie tries or a TV show, any they all do it. Like someone leaves either for scheduling reasons or because they got fired, and then they try and replace them either with the same ethnicity, same sex, same. It's like ugh. Especially
we don't need another. You know, they've done it with all their other movies. They've, you know, first it was you know, Twandy Newton, and then Paula Patton, and Maggie Q. I mean, they've done it with every one of them. They brought in somebody else. So we don't need that. It's been nice to have her as part of the team.
Yeah. Why can Benji start from the third movie and not stay on the team? Why can't Maggie Q stay on the team? All these people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope you're right. I hope that's where it goes.
Yeah.
And I am super excited for the next one, which it left off in such a great way. The ship. So at the end of the day, it's the fact that the AI is out and about in the universe. It's on this ship is the only place where its physical source code lives.
Yeah.
Cut off from anybody. It's the only thing that could actually hurt it. That's why it's trying to find it. The whole reason of this is to protect itself.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
but what's interesting is I remember in the trailer, there was a sequence where they were scuba diving in the Arctic at some point. Yeah.
Or do you think they were showing stuff from...
That might have been a scene that's going to be that got moved to the next movie. So I'm not sure. I mean, I know that in an interview that I saw or the Light the Fuse interview that I heard with Tom Cruise, he was talking about the Arctic and McQuarrie told him to shh. So I'm assuming that's in the next movie now.
Oh, Light the Fuse, the now Paramount. Yeah,
Paramount Pictures. Officially owned. Yes, those guys.
Good
yes.
for them.
Good for them.
Yes. That's awesome, though.
It is awesome. It's very cool. But I was listening to their podcast the other day. They're talking about the Arctic sequence, and McQuarrie is mentioning that it's in the next movie, but they'll be quiet not to talk about it. But of course, you know we're going out there because we're going to see Dunlow again in the next movie, you know? So,
and the
man of that station out there.
And we got to see Shea Whigham's probably going to come back.
Yes, his name is Briggs in this movie. So he's like a throwback to Dan Briggs from the show.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, the whole movie. Yeah, the whole movie, I thought, he's got something against Ethan. Is he like Emilio Estevez's his brother or something and wants it to get Ethan back for that?
No, that's Charlie Sheen.
Exactly.
Don't get confused.
Character-wise, yeah.
Known from such movies as Navy SEALs.
Navy SEALs, exactly. He does that jump off the bridge there, yeah.
So Dead Reckoning brings back some Maverick people, too.
Yes, Greg Tarzan Davis is in it.
Yep. And also Charles Parnell.
Charles Parnell, yeah, at the beginning. Yeah, he's in the opening.
So I like both of those actors, so I'm excited to see.
I thought they were both great, too. I was glad to see them both in there.
I think we're gonna see more of... Well, I'm sorry, what's his full name? Paris?
Greg. Oh, Paris? Which one?
What's his name? The Shea Whigham's...
Guy. Oh, Briggs.
Briggs.
Yeah, Briggs. Yeah.
No, Shea Whigham's henchman. What's his...
Oh, I don't remember what his name.
No, he's from.
Yeah, Greg Tarzan.
Tarzan. Oh, what Tarzan, a great middle name.
Yeah, the middle name Tarzan.
So he is. Hopefully he could even become part of the.
Yes, because he was. IMF. He was leaning.
He seems IMF. Willing.
Yes,
it seems like Shea Whigham does have beef. He goes, "Do you know him? Not directly, which means
exactly.
There's an IMF. Something has happened."
Exactly. That's why I thought about Emilio Estevez or somebody in the past that
he could be Carrie Russell's brother.
That's true. He could be. You're right. I forgot Never about know. That. You're right. I try not to think about three very often, but that's it. You're right.
Well, I saw your review. I saw your ratings.
Yes, my ratings.
You put them up today. So if you haven't, go look in our in the Impossible Minute Force
exactly.
on Facebook. You have this movie as third?
Yes, third behind... Fallout and Rogue Nation, but that's only because I've only seen it once right now.
Right. So yeah. It could move up.
It could move up. Yeah. Yeah. Because Rogue Nation was number one for a long time. And even after I saw Fallout the first time, it was still number one because I can watch that one anytime it's on or I put it on. Just the other day, I put it on. But Fallout, I can watch almost anytime now. And it took, you know, two or three viewings to really like solidify for me.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this one the same way. It's going to be real tight between all three of them, though.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see where it goes with me, too.
Yeah.
Right now, if I had to rate all of them off the top of my head, it's hard because when you've done a minute-by-minute podcast, one and two have a certain, like, love that I have for them.
Yeah.
So I have them, like, I love talking about them. That's not the same as watching them. I understand that now.
Yeah.
You know, it does skew my... Probably puts two actually pretty high because we had such a great time talking about it.
We did. We really did.
So I think I'm still Ghost Protocol's. I am most entertained by Ghost Protocol. I know cool. it has probably yeah. one of the weakest bad guys
mm-hmm.
of bad guys, but that's number one. Fallout is number two. This one, it's going to be between Rogue Nation and this one as to mm-hmm. the three spot. Right now, Rogue yeah. Nation probably wins out. This one's four. And then one, two, three.
Yeah.
So one, two, and three are at the bottom, not because they're not as good. They're not as sophisticated. They get more sophisticated and become
yeah, I better agree.
Movies. I have a quote here from, I actually did research, from Palm. She says that this series is the best of this genre. And that's, you can't say it any better than that.
No, it's the
best
agree.
Of this genre of movies, and every movie is better. As someone who also does the Fast and Furious movies, those movies get more ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're not better every time, but every Mission Impossible movie, I think since Ghost Protocol, has been better than the last.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree.
And it's hard because I love Ghost Protocol, but then you're like, yeah. oh damn, Rogue Nation. Oh, all of them. You know, they're yeah. all amazing. Fallout.
Yeah, they're all very, very close to one another as far as quality is concerned. And they get longer and a little bit more entertaining with each one that comes out. So I'm really excited to see what they do with eight, you know, or part two.
Yep. And when people ask me, why do you like these Tom Cruise movies? I've said it now since Maverick came out. I said, because he is a goddamn movie star. Because he comes out and makes movies that people want to see. And it's crazy. And there's so much baggage around him. But I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't. He's a great producer.
Yeah. I went to a 3:30 afternoon show at an IMAX on the outside of town. And the thing was full on a Tuesday afternoon. Wasn't a holiday. It's just a Tuesday afternoon. But it was full.
I mean, Maverick has also given him the clout post-pandemic to say, I know what I'm doing.
Yes, definitely.
And he said that to, he's telling, I mean, Paramount benefits from it, and everybody benefits from Maverick being a billion-dollar movie.
I agree.
It shows you, like, yeah, this was never going to be in, you know, streaming or anything. That was never
going to. No.
But him pushing it back and pushing it back, he didn't control some of the stuff, but he kept pushing it to where he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, he also, now we're at a point where he has pushed it the week before Barbie and Oppenheimer come out. Two huge mm-hmm. movies that everybody's all about, Barbie, Oppenheimer, you know, double features.
Yep.
This movie should be seen before you go see those. I think it's a great summer. I think it's a great summer. This summer has been one of the best summers so far.
I agree. Movies. I mean, I don't think there's been very much that I've seen that I've been like, no, that wasn't very good.
Well, The Flash. Almost everything. The Flash.
Well, I like The Flash.
Well, you're the only person on this planet.
Bye, buddy.
Okay, be unto yourself.
I'll be unto myself, exactly.
So, yeah, that's our review. For those of you that listen to Minute Impossible normally, thank you for waiting. We appreciate it. Chris and I both, it's not that we had a falling out. It's not that we just literally life got in the way and COVID. Yeah. And we were just kind of like, we got other things to do. And the joke is that once Tom Cruise stopped making movies for a while, we stopped talking.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Next, let's say Monday. Monday, our episode will drop, and that time frame is 24 minutes to 40 minutes 23 seconds. So it's actually mm-hmm. a little under 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you're watching it at home, watch 24 minute from the 24th minute. It's right before Carrie's eyeball explodes, all the way to when the last line of what we'd be talking about is Tom Cruise saying, "I need 30 seconds and a truck." Mm-hmm. Which is right before they go to the Vatican.
To the Vatican, exactly.
So so listen next week. Minute Impossible's back, and I'm super excited for it.
Yes, me too.
So until next time, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
This minute will self-destruct if you choose.
Oh.